What up, though, everybody, and welcome to the Pop Culture 223 Podcast, your go-to podcast for entertainment, firearms, training, and education. Let's dive into the latest trends, explore firearm topics, and gain valuable training insight. Join us for a dynamic blend of entertainment and expertise. Let's get it popping. What up, though, everybody? This is another episode of the Pop Culture 223 Podcast. This is episode season three, episode four, Bear?
Yeah, I believe so, yep.
Oh, yeah. I believe so. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is, though.
But, hey, thanks for tuning in. Hey, today we got a good one.
Yes,
we got
sir.
The Brooklyn Bounty Hunter on today. He from Brooklyn, B.
Definitely from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn in the house, baby.
Without a doubt. Yo, but look, check this out. Affiliate today is FLP, Firearms Legal Protection. The slogan is, if you protect yourself, they will protect you. This my water.
I know, man. I'm trying to give you the promo with the,
My bad.
Your assistant Vanda today, man. Come on now.
Hey, man. We got the real one on the ones and twos today, Lance.
Oh, yeah.
Dub in the house. My brother's here, so he can, he's doing the ones and twos so I can get into a little more fuckery, you know.
So the guest today is CJ, UDA. He owns Urban Defensive Solutions. He was got a little bit executive protection background. He's a USCCA instructor. And he's the Brooklyn Bounty Hunter. From Brooklyn, retired now.
Well retired.
I think he had to get up out of Brooklyn, so he shot to Detroit. I think he had to leave Brooklyn real quick. He had to shoot to Detroit. So we're going to get into that. But before we get into that, please like and subscribe. So quick, so fast. You know what I'm saying? So we can get them subscriptions up. Like this show. Like the channel. Share all the stuff we do. All the effery we do.
Yes, sir.
But CJ, introduce
yourself. Tomfoolery.
Tomfoolery. So CJ, introduce yourself, man. A little background. You know where you're from.
All right.
I said a little bit, but go ahead.
Born and raised in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Spent most of my time there, but I also spent a lot of time here in Detroit. Was raised in Oak Park with my mom. You know, spent summers out here. So I'm well versed on Detroit life as well as Brooklyn life. I got into the firearm training about 25 years ago as an NRA instructor. And then I really got serious the last, I would say, 7 years as a USCCA instructor. I really been going serious with the instruction now. Mm-hmm. With everything been going on since the last administration that we had in the last 5 years of just day-to-day stress, guns have definitely picked up in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And my focus is to make sure that everybody knows their Second Amendment right and what they can and what they can't do in the urban environment.
There we go. That's how we live for it.
Yes, sir.
I like that.
So, you was in executive protection. How long have you been doing that?
I started off at a young age of 21. I started off doing some bouncing. We talked about that earlier. I did some bouncing in New York under a guy named Peter Gation, who owned the Tunnel, Limelight, Club USA, and the Palladium.
What was that like, man?
In the 80s, well, that was in the 90s. That's when, in that golden era. The bad boy era started.
Yeah. Did you see P. Diddy coming in with his shirt, like looking like Prince?
You gonna say Diddy with
the shit that's like going on Prince. Now.
Let's get right to the Diddy
stuff. The stuff that's going on now with Diddy is not the stuff that I seen growing up in the tunnel. Because, again, I was there when they did the release party for Bad Boys.
Okay.
Biggie Smalls' release party and Mary J. Blige's release party.
Okay.
And that's when they were launching that whole thing.
So you've been through the, I'm up too high now, man. So you've been there through like the Big Cap era.
Big Cap was the DJ at the tunnel. Funkmaster Flex was the DJ at the tunnel. So we had, Mobb Deep was passing out CDs and flyers just try to get recognition back then. You know, and the tunnel was, like we talked about, that's searching. In the tunnel, you had to have your shoes in your hand. It could be dead winter, slush on the floor. You had to bring an extra pair of socks because you was accustomed to having your shoes in the hand before you walked in that door. They searched everything, bro. Oh, wow. Man, everything.
Damn.
You know, I said his people just coming there with them, with the little
the box cutters.
Yeah,
That was heavy in New York, but nobody got in the tunnel with none of that shit, bro.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to tell you that right now. Nobody got into the tunnel with that.
But there had to be some shit going on.
I mean, we had, we had 100 dudes inside and 50 dudes outside.
Damn.
That's what the tunnel, that's the type of security you had. Cause it
wow.
Was no dress, there was no dress code. And it was cats from 19 on up.
Mm-hmm.
No dress code. And you was allowed to bring a certain amount of drugs in there if it was for personal use.
Damn.
Cats was on there high all day long.
Oh, wow.
So
damn.
If your security wasn't tight in New York, you would lose everything.
So you had 100 securities indoors and
50 outside.
Wow.
50 outside, bro. You had to. You had to have the whole block.
Because the tunnel was big as hell, though, right?
The tunnel held like 4,000 people.
That's what I thought. That was like
it was a huge club.
Stupidly huge club. Yeah. Mm.
So
yeah.
So what's a situation you got a pop that popped up in there that was like, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, meaning like well, 1 being like extremely
I got stories about the tunnel, bro.
No, none of them involve throwing out ODB or nothing like that, does
no,
it?
I got a story about the Woo as well for the Source Awards, but the biggest thing I remember was, I don't know if you guys remember this group. They were called the Young Black Teenagers.
Sound familiar.
They was all white boys.
Dude, that was at House Party 3.
Yes, that was one of the cats. That's the main cat I'm about to talk about. So
that's from Fats. You can't see him off the store. He's doing a little production.
Yeah,
watching the camera
they
back there.
The dreadlocks and all that shit.
Fats a small time hip hop historian like the rest of us too. So he'll know.
Right. How old are you, brother?
43.
Okay, yeah, I'm 51. So he know what I'm talking about.
He knows.
So a guy came out to the front. I was actually searching people at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The guy came out and he had a box cutter cut from his ear to his chin.
Mm.
And every time he talked, that shit was just opening up.
Oh.
And I said to him, I said, yo, and the first thing he said to me is like, it was one of them young black teenagers. Now, I didn't really know that group at the time.
So you looking for young black teenagers.
So when he said that, I gave my man a look like, nigga, this whole club is full of young black teenagers. But then when he said, nah, they was white, you could see, it was like a heat-seeking missile. You knew exactly who these motherfuckers were. I don't know if I can cuss. Am I already cussing?
Well, you didn't already said a couple times.
All right.
You keep it light, the S word. That's why I apologize for the F bomb.
Yeah, my bad. I appreciate it. I'm sorry about that. So.
Can't bring Vice CJ on anymore.
You got to tell me ahead of time, bro. You got to tell me ahead of time. So, he had this box, this surgical cut right from chin to ear, dude. It was from ear to chin. And he's talking, and it's opening up. But when he said it was a young black teenager, we finally realized what it was. Now, the tunnel was known for, if you got into some shit at the tunnel, you probably wasn't going to walk out sane. It was going to go down. Number one, you had to check in your coat. That shit's on 27th and West Side Highway, so it's brick in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. If you get kicked out of the club in New York, you don't get your jacket to the club closed.
Damn.
It's 4 or 5 in the morning, time to sign the tunnel closed, so you outside. You know what I'm saying? With no coat on.
Mm-hmm.
They strip you down when you go to the tunnel. So when we realized who it was, we singled the guys out. And again, they got a pretty vicious beat. You know, you don't come out the tunnel doing stuff like that, but that's one of the times when stuff did get slipped in.
Mm.
It was a box cutter because those are so hard to come by.
Yeah.
In New York, the box cutter is the choice of weapon.
Damn.
Because it's so small and versatile.
Easy to conceal.
Dog.
You can do something to somebody, they won't even realize you were the one that did it. Because that cut is so precise.
The box cutters and razors.
Hit you, it's going to take us, you ain't going to realize what happened until it happened.
Dog, but it ain't just that. It's a tool, too, out
it's
there. We tell the story all the time about, you know, when we was doing hip-hop stuff and going out to New York, and when we went, I was telling my boy Pipes, like, yo, keep everything in the front and blah, 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 the good stuff. I'm like, because, you know, the pickpockets and the way they do. He was like, yeah, nah, nothing happened with it. Now, ironically, somebody did take my camera. That's a whole other story. But I'm like, yeah, nah, I done heard about that. People just slitting real quick the back pocket and catch the wallet when it drop out and stuff.
The bottom of the purse.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. But it's such a thing, if you ever got pulled over and stopped by the cops, it's an easy thing to justify why you have it. You know what I'm saying?
For work.
I work at a grocery store. You can tell them, man, I work at a bodega or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I need it. I just forgot it in my pocket. So
it's
a common thing that everybody seems to have.
Man.
Like I said, in that experience of working at the tunnel, I've seen people have full-blown conversations and have an open razor
in their mouth.
I don't understand that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you never know until they spit it out. You know what I'm saying? So when you check, when you went in the tunnel, mm-hmm. you got checked, bro. You had
that's
had
crazy.
You got to do gum check. Searches in there.
Like you yeah, see that bro. Shit in videos and shit. Mm-hmm. You know, being from here,
Tupac with the razor.
Yeah,
and like,
just hearing that that shit was real. Yeah, that was like real. That's wild as hell.
Just, man, real. Listen, I would real. Freak the fuck out. I get
you
I,
couldn't
listen,
make
though,
me put
listen,
a razor
listen,
on my mouth.
Listen, if a annihilator gets stuck on my in my tooth, I'm about to freak out.
Right.
Back.
Right. Right.
You know, you eat nah, later, boy, I'm like, oh,
that's
shit.
That's hard to survival, though, bro. It's
yeah.
Hard to survival.
Yeah.
But why was the tunnel like that, though? Just so many boroughs coming up in there? Just
because it was in Manhattan. It's a neutral, like, New York was set in boroughs. Like, you got your Brooklyn, you got Queens, you got, mm-hmm. you know, Harlem. Everybody Bronx. Got their club. But most Brooklyn cats don't go to Harlem to go to club.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go to Queens to go to clubbing. But Manhattan was one of them neutral zones.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody came to the tunnel. Plus, the tunnel was known if you was trying to get any type of hip-hop going, that's where you need to be on Sunday mm-hmm. night. That's where Funkmaster Flex is at. That's where Big Cap is. So if you're trying to promote any type of music,
mm-hmm.
that's where you need to be at.
Hey, man, how fine was Mary? Thick and fine was Mary.
I'm not going to be on your side with that one, bro.
Oh, for real? that was just a question.
Nah, she wasn't one that turned my head, bro.
Okay. Which one then came in through there? He was like, yeah, Lord have mercy.
Yo, I keep that stick on me.
Mm. Probably that many, huh?
See, man, that's
the one person that gets me going would be Alicia Keys.
Ooh,
that's
yeah,
the one.
I can see
I
that.
You see her in that red?
That's the one that
you see her in that red?
I can believe that.
I see
Usher
her
back up,
there,
bro.
That's the one, bro.
I got to get at Usher for
that's
sure.
That's the one.
Yeah,
but, hey,
man.
Let's get into some real serious stuff, bro. He got that Sig sucks and Springfield sucks. I'm an MEP guy. MEP forever.
Okay.
Yeah, I got an MEP shield.
Yeah, he a Smitty kind of guy.
Okay. He got that Zev Sig, man. What's your favorite gun to carry?
My favorite gun on a day-to-day carry is probably that 509.
The FN?
The 509 tactical.
Yeah.
Man, I hear, too, them FNs are, you, it kind of like CZs where, like, you love, I don't want to say you love them or you hate them, but it's definitely like a choice.
It's definitely a choice.
Like
to
not,
me,
not,
Sig
it ain't like
choice.
Everybody kind
yeah,
of
and
thing.
Yeah, it's not
right?
Everybody good.
I don't think I didn't really like about the Sig. The ones I had was, you know, messing with like the Sig 365. Back in, like, I didn't like the trigger guard. They were wide. Like mm-hmm. the one on yours is kind of wider. I like the Glocks or the M&Ps, how smaller they are, and then like the flatness of it. I didn't really
get
into
those guns are totally different than Sig.
I mean, the ergonomics of them are different. I just, mm-hmm. but you know, when you first grab a gun, a firearm, you got it in your hands, like, oh, this feel good. And then you go from, you know what I'm saying? I kind of go from there.
Like, the Glocks feel good for a service pistol for me because the way they sit low.
Mm-hmm.
But I just outgrown them, dude. M&Ps too, bro.
How you outgrow them?
I outgrew them, bro.
He just upgrade. Hey, I outgrew some. I got me a Staccato, but I'm still
yeah,
going to carry my
Staccato boys, man.
I'm still carry my M&P. Let's tell us about that. Hey, shout out to Rostic Firearms, man. He was supposed to be on the show.
Mr. Double Tap over here.
He supposed to be on the show. He has some other things, some obligations going on. So we're going to get him on the show in April. Black owned firearms company that makes rifles. So tell us a little bit about the AR. It's called an RA-15.
RA-15 is what he puts his stamp on it, yeah. Like I said, when I first met him, I met him at the Guns of America event, and he supplied all the firearms. I think that's when I met you the first time.
That was the first time? Okay.
And he supplied all the ARs at the time, and when I was doing the table with this young lady, I was looking like, yo, these kind of some nice pieces. They wasn't like the type of guns that you would actually just loan out to people.
Mm-hmm.
But he had like six of them out there. They were all custom, you know, custom joints. And I got to playing with one of them. And then when I realized it was his and it was a young black man, it was easy for me to make a decision mm-hmm. to give him a shot. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't see nobody in his age group that's even messing with that type of stuff. We don't really have a lot of people in his age group that's really promoting that Second Amendment thing. You know what I'm saying? So when I seen him doing that, it was easy for me, bro.
Well, he's doing it on all fronts, kind of like because he's a CPL instructor and he's a black-owned businessman, and he has selling firearms.
He's a black-owned businessman in a white man's industry.
In a white man's industry.
Facts.
Right.
But he has a 9mm now. I don't know if it's just testing and running, but I've seen it. So he's kind of like Dion. You know what I'm saying? He just
rifle
going in
or
there.
Pistol?
He got all pistols.
No, I'm talking about the 9mm.
It's a pistol, handgun, like
No, I'm sorry. We talking pistol or AR pistol?
No, he has every every style of rifle from. He about to drop a 308 carbines and all that too. He made all rifle, like, you know, every length, and he about to drop a 308. I think that's what he mentioned.
I still want a carbine, man.
But he has a 9mm gun, handgun. It looks like a Glock.
Okay.
Look like a Glock, but I just like, man, Deion, just shake up the world. Why not?
Yeah.
Let's get to it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I'm about to get me my hands on one. Cause you had a 14 and a half. You said you got
14.5. Then I had a cause I basically when that whole brace thing came out with the pistols, I basically told him, I said, listen, I want the smallest I can get without having to consider the pistol. So I can put all the dressings that I want on it. So he said, you know, he came with the 14.5 and he welded the muzzle on it. So it made it.
And that's
16.
Why I bought my Daniel, that 14 and a half, because I was just like, all this brace stuff, it's too much unsurety.
It's too much.
Let me get a rifle that I can run and take if I had to go out of town, shoot, whatever. I can go with it. But, and that's why. But, see, I met him. I didn't even know that was him when I was at the GOA event. And then the EDC guy had told me who he was, and I was like, oh, that's him. So, you know, me and him been on the phone, you know, conversating, kicking it, so. Either I'm going to go up there and holler at him or, you know, he's going to come down here. But he did say he was going to definitely do the show.
I think that's going to be my next one, too, is a 14 and a half. That's that, them Griffins I was showing you, too, that's what I liked, it was the 14 and a half. My 16 is cool, but like you said, when we doing, it's cool when we out shooting and stuff, but I have noticed the length of it and being able to come up.
It so changes
it's,
the game.
It's a little more versus the short,
for
you know.
Sure.
Being a,
for sure.
Just them two and a half inches or whatever, just enough to, yeah.
But see, where he really sticks out is the custom paint jobs he's putting on.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those premiums are custom. Like, I don't know if you've seen the one he did for me. It's like a green, but it's like a rustic type feel to it. It's like a used look. That's the guns that he had out there that day. You know what I'm saying? So I fell in love with the way it looked.
Kind of distressed kind of look.
Yeah, like a distressed look. And then once I actually got to shoot it, I'm like, yo, you're doing some good stuff, bro. The triggers on them are all nice. It's a single trigger. The one I got, at least, is a single stage trigger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's doing something new with it, because I see the new premieres that he's dropping are different than what I got.
Okay.
Because
he got the charging handles on them.
He got the new charging handles on
his name
too,
and stuff on them.
So, and, you know, I know some of this stuff, but I'm asking questions like this for audience purpose too. So is he using, you know, a proprietor type of trigger? So like, is he using like a Geissele or a Timney or something like that? Or is this a trigger that he's developing himself?
So
that's a good question. I don't think he's developing that trigger, but that's something I would probably.
Something that, like, he's got certain parts. Yeah. That he's,
so from, let's say, from the rifle itself, from the upper to lower and the rail, and I want to say the barrel setup is his, besides like the barrel right now.
And the lower is his.
Yeah, like the upper, lower, and all that. So when you want to, you can kind of like tailor make it to.
So you're starting from there, and then.
Then you said if you want to, you want the guys in 2 stage, 3 stage, or whatever, you can have him here put it in there.
Because
if you
want a surefire, you basically can build it.
Right.
Build it.
Okay. If you want the surefire muzzle brake, because you got a, like an RC can or something like that, you can put it on there. Like the premium ones come with his signature Rostic charging handle.
Gotcha.
So the premium ones are the only ones that come with it, and the other ones don't. But he go from pistol size 7-inch 8 to like he about to start doing the 308s. Like he
he also has something that I don't know if he's actually dropped yet, but I've seen him shooting it where it's an AR-15 platform, but it shoot.
The 7.62 round?
The 7.62 rounds with the AR, with the AK. AK mags.
Mm-hmm. I seen it. I think there was maybe the testing tune stage of that.
I think that's going to be like that new. I mean, it's not new, but I think that's about to be that new hotness in the industry, because that's like the third time I've heard of somebody.
That's a new hybrid.
Coming out, yeah. You know, because a lot of people like the power behind AK, that 7.62.
But, you know,
because they're trying to blend that accuracy, and I know that's where 300 Blackout come from. Right. They're trying to blend, but for real,
you know,
for real.
That 7.62 AK rounds are not, it's more for damage purposes than it is accuracy. Mm. I think the period, what's the word? Purist? People, if you get an AK, get an AK.
Purist,
like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the people, you get an AK. When you switch it, try to put it on an AR platform, it's kind of like, he might just get a 308. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He might just get a 308 or whatever, keep it moving. But, you know, it is what it is. He changed the game for sure. But, see, how long have you been a USCCA instructor?
I've been a USCCA instructor now going on 7 years.
Okay.
7 years, but I've been NRA for over 25.
So when you was in New York, were you able to carry a firearm?
No.
Did you? Did you try to get that?
You can try. The only people that's allowed to carry firearms to the state of New York, if you're transporting like $10,000 to the bank, and that's the only time you can actually carry that firearm, mm-hmm. or if you work in the Diamond District, they're giving them shits out like water for the Diamond District.
So you gotta have okay.
You gotta be Jewish.
Because you're in the Diamond District. Because like we talked about this off air on the phone a couple of days ago, and like we were talking about that, and I was saying, yeah, it's wild because like New York so Michigan is a shall issue, and New York is a can issue. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it, so it's like they have a CPL.
You can get one, but you got to be the requirements.
Yeah, the requirements for it, dog. It's
never stops.
It's worse than in California. And California is nuts when it comes to not trying to issue people guns.
I think California just flat out said no to certain people.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
New York,
yeah,
for example,
yeah,
it's like even the minor misdemeanors that you would have in the state of Michigan, that wouldn't fly in New York
mm-hmm.
if you applied. That would be the one thing that they would use. They basically will string you out so long that you forget about it.
Dang.
That's basically what they do. Mm. New York has definitely always been and that's the main reason why I left New York. I'm going to be honest with you. I left New York for that reason. Because there's a lot of gun action out there. And like my father's 82 years old. He carries a little snub nose that I gave him. You know what I'm saying? But he's at the point where he's like, what are they going to do to me? But I would rather my father have it than not have it.
Right.
Shit going on out there.
Oh, he's still in Brooklyn?
He lives in Manhattan now.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in Manhattan.
So when did you transfer from doing the tunnel to like bounty hunter going after dunk jokers?
So most
like,
of the
what mind shift was that? Like, look, I'm tired of you bouncing jokers up. I'm about to go catch a joker that's sitting in the bed with his girlfriend in his drawers.
Most of the guys that I started out the tunnel with was either retired police officers or police officers that were like no longer on the force for whatever reason they had. And most of the, I don't know if you,
he said whatever
back in
reason.
The 90s in the Bronx, most of those officers had a lot of shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff going on. They got mm-hmm. bagged for a lot of stuff. So in their off time to make money,
mm-hmm.
they started doing that bounty hunter work.
Mm.
So that's how I got into it, by working with these guys in security. And by being in security in the tunnel in those different places, one thing I learned was you have to be diplomatic. It's not always mm-hmm. about the rah-rah. Because even with that 50 outside and that 100 inside, you still could lose, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You still outnumber
something. You still outnumber.
You said it earlier, it's still 4,000 people.
Talking out
there,
the 90s and 80s when we wouldn't even let Wu-Tang come into most of the club because
that's why I asked earlier if one of them was on DB.
Too much chaos, bro. They came with too much chaos.
It was probably too deep.
It was coming with too much chaos. So right. They was banned from a lot of clubs from performing.
Wow. And,
you know what I'm saying? You couldn't even perform with the Wu in certain places because that's what the Angel Dust was heavy in mm-hmm. them days. And it was wilding, bro.
They come 100 deep up in there?
100 deep.
You got to figure, man, it's technically.
Everybody got mics.
Yeah, when ODB was alive and Capadonna wasn't in gym, man, it's like 10 dudes in Wu-Tang.
Wild.
And you figure each dude got like 5 dudes in the entourage,
yeah,
10 dudes. Yeah, you're talking like 20, 30, 100 dudes coming in there.
They had the Source Awards at the tunnel. This was back in 98.
That's where it was. That's where that one was at?
They had the Source. Yeah. The after party was there.
Okay.
After party. Okay. And me and my roommate Miguel, we were holding the door down. Now my roommate went to school with Raekwon. He
Word.
Went to high school, so he knew him personally. So in order to get to the Source Awards, you had to have the after party, you had to have an invite to the actual Source Awards. Only the main members, maybe 6 or 7 dudes, had passes from the Wu. So I remember when they came in. Now if you've ever been to the tunnel, it's one door to get in and it's 5 steps to get up. There's a big metal door that they can shut at any time. You know what I'm saying? So me and Miguel, we at the front. We hold it down. We see the entourage roll up. They got caravans and they got Volkswagen bugs, the little bugs and shit. 15 of these motherfuckers, bro, with Wu-Tang symbols on it. You know what I'm saying? They pull up, parking right in the middle of the 27. No parking lot. They just mm-hmm. parking, bro. So I automatically knew something was about to go down, bro. when Raekwon walked up to my roommate, they did their little greeting, and he said to him, hey, man, I got a couple parties. Can you get them in? My man respectfully said, this ain't that night. This is not even a night you could pay to get in. You got to have that pass. He looked my man in his face and says, all right, they'll get in. And right when he said that, bro, imagine 30, 40 young niggas buzzing. Zzz, that's what they were doing, son. And I'm looking around. I'm like, yo, this shit ain't, this not about to be good, bro.
It's not buzzing.
You hear what I'm saying, bro? They buzzing, bro.
Bzzz. Like literally, like.
And literally doing this. 30, 40 cats. Now, again, there's one way to get into the tunnel. There's two big metal doors. They start bum rushing. They just start coming.
You talking about guys being like, bzzz, like killer bees?
Yeah.
That's what they call themselves. Killer bees, bro. So they started buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
They start bum rushing the
door. Like they call signal and
right.
Shit.
Half of them, you know, mm-hmm. 50 dudes running into one door, and there's only two. We standing out the way, bro. You know what I'm saying? We getting out the way because they just coming. I saw my roommate all of a sudden. He's about 6'5", 300, 350. He a big dude. I see them drop like pancakes. They hit him with a box cutter. And they caught that arm, and that blood started leaking. My man passed out of me. When I seen that, I go to retreat to go inside. They didn't close the door. So I'm at the top of the steps. My man on the floor. I'm trying to kick, punch, get people up, you know, trying to come in. He laying on the floor. They didn't close the door, my ass. That's the last time I fucked with the Wu-Tang, bro. I wouldn't even work a night.
Damn.
I wouldn't even work a night if they came out, bro. It wasn't worth it.
Damn.
It wasn't worth it.
Because it don't be Wu. It be all
it'd
the...
It
be all
the whole project. It be the whole they Park Hill be down there, bro.
Yeah, man.
The whole Park Hill came with them every time they performed. If they had 20 dudes on the stage, they all had mics. So it was a horrible concert. No,
it's like half Park Hill, half Stapleton.
You ain't hearing nothing.
You got a few Long Island cats up in there.
It was off the chain, bro.
Damn.
So, yeah, it was nice where you had to be diplomatic
mm-hmm.
when it came to talking to certain people because you didn't know if he came in with 20 other dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because nobody came to the tunnel, Dolo. They all came with their little crew.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kick one dude out, you had to worry about
everybody else
section of, yeah, section of dudes ready to go.
Man, we can tell them stories, man.
Yeah, so yeah, there was some times in the tunnel, man, where you had to set a precedence to let people know, like, if you come here and they get out of hand, you will get jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, man, we was all running around and trying to be like, yo, chill out, son.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you hear that, you know, that was my thing. You had to have a good time, you know what I'm saying? Because you know what's going to happen. You're going to be out in the cold. Your girl going to be in here. You ain't going to be able to find her. We ain't getting no, you know what I'm saying? So I was always on that diplomatic thing, and that's what got me into the bounty hunter because a lot of these white guys that I was bouncing with didn't know how to communicate with the hood cats.
Mm-hmm.
They was coming in like cops.
Mm-hmm.
They had the cop mentality. I didn't have that mentality. I still had that hood mentality. When I could go in there, I can diplomatically sit down with somebody and talk them down.
So tell us about the pizza box trying to get – tell us about the pizza box scenario.
That was one of the things that I had to do to keep – because, I was working with a lot of cops that in a normal setting probably wouldn't fuck with me.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? But they were using me for a certain thing, but I had to make sure that I came home safe every day. So I had to be diplomatic. I had to be, you know, sneaky with certain things. So in one instance, what I did was I reached out to the dudes. It was a dude I was looking for. It was on some petty shit.
We talking about bounty hunt. Like you going after a fugitive.
Going
right?
after a fugitive. Mm-hmm. So
recovery, yeah.
A lot of people think, and I used to like the term bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
We never used that term. Our term was fugitive recovery agents because it set a better
right.
stage with the people that you're dealing with. Because
right.
a lot of people know bounty hunters ain't got that authority like a cop.
Right. right.
You know what I'm saying? So if you use that term or if you have it on your gear, you can get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever see the situation where somebody fight like a security guard, they handle security guards a lot different than they handle with police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go in there with different ways of how to catch people. And that's why I came up with like the TV. I called the dude's mom and I was like, you know, so-and-so won this TV. he filled out this shit, whatever he did, you know
right.
what I'm saying?
6 months
he
ago.
Won this TV, but I need him to be present to sign. You know what I'm saying? And the TV is his. And I would go as far as having a whole full box, bro. TV, 72-inch TV, delivery crew with a U-Haul, the whole nine, bro. Like, I was delivering multiple TVs.
Hey.
And I would say if I ran that scheme probably 10 times, I bagged at least 7 or 8 of those cats like that.
And in the truck was probably the rest of the team just sitting there waiting to pull my man.
We was riding U-Haul trucks. And the thing is, a lot of the stuff we was picking up was really petty. So I can easily talk to it. Like, in some cases, I can talk to a guy and say, listen, by me taking you here now, it's going to make your situation better. But if you prolong it, you're taking something like this, like a seatbelt ticket that got out of hand, and now you're making it where cats is looking for you. You know what I'm saying? So
mm-hmm.
a lot of those bonds, if it's under 100 grand, it's simple shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The simple stuff, you can talk. You can talk your way So you need to have those diplomatic skills, and I learned that working at the tunnel, dealing with the hood cats, the white cats, the lawyer kids. You know, when you go to a club in New York, you're dealing with all type of people. You may be dealing with a cat that Upper East Side that holding on millions because his dad's a lawyer, but he want to be in the hood. You know what I'm saying? So you had to, you couldn't grab them up. You couldn't grab them up. You know what I'm saying? If you grab up one of those, you may lose a job.
Prime example of that, dog, the China Club. Man. I wasn't even into it like that no more. And I, like I said, the time we went to New York, dog, the China Club, man, it's like, how can you explain it? It's like four or five clubs in one.
That was the Limelight. The Limelight was like that. That was he had a club called the Limelight. It was an old church like the one in Detroit. And it was, I think, four levels, and each level had its own different scenario. So when I say the Limelight was, it wasn't for the faint, bro. Like, you had drag queens. You had every possible thing you could think of was coming through them doors, bro.
That's where Diddy was at.
And everybody's mixing here
all day, fellas.
Prime example. So picture St. Andrews in his heyday when they had all three floors, right? And you got the hip hop, you got the grind, you got the showing up, hip hop in the basement. You got the mainstream top 40 stuff in the middle 40, or whatever.
The rave kids up top.
You know, and then on the top you got like the house and techno. But like the China Club and Limelight, we didn't go to Limelight, but I heard it's like that on steroids. It's like ridiculous. It's like three times the size of that. And it's steroids, like, you got like Latin stuff up here. Everything. You got hip hop here. You got jazz here. And then you like, dog, what the
Limelight
hell is this?
Limelight was a place where whatever you got going on, you could be whoever you want in the Limelight. When I say that, I would see dudes that would come straight from Wall Street in full blown suits and leave out in full blown dresses.
Damn.
They would come in with their duffel bags, bro. And they would leave out in dresses, bro. A lot of the performers that we had were dudes that would be dressed as women. You know, New York is like that, bro. You got to be super careful in New York, man.
You do.
The thing about New York that made it interesting was, like I said, you have those boroughs. Mm-hmm. Those boroughs represent nationalities.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you got some Chinese cats coming in, and they coming in there deep, and they on that hood shit, they probably triads.
Mm-hmm.
They not coming in on a block shit. They coming in on a whole nation shit. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the Jamaicans when they come in. They coming in full blown, bro. Then you got the Latin Kings. So they coming in as a nation. So they don't have to be from Brooklyn. They can be from wherever. But when they come together, that's what you had to.
Nation.
It's a nation you dealing with out there, bro. You dealing with nations, bro.
He ain't playing, dog.
What about that one story you were telling me about when you was chasing the guy through the house? Because like as a bounty hunter, and like some of the stuff I used to see on TV, especially the bounty hunter, they never really carry weapons, like firearms. It was always like pepper spray and stuff like that.
Well, in certain states, like I said, New York and Jersey was one of them states where you can't. It's not accessible to have firearms. Now, if you was doing it here or in Texas, you could probably use that firearm with some training. Dog, for example, had a felony. That's why he couldn't carry that. I don't know about how Hawaii is. That's where I think he was located.
I think Hawaii is kind of set up like California and New York, where it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
so that,
like
maybe that's why he wasn't doing that.
But I guess, you know, so in that world, how was it like going after apprehending fugitives? Like, how many teams did you have? Like, you know, how many people were with you? Because, like, the people you're going after don't care about the law in New York. They probably got pistols on them. You know what
100%.
I'm saying? Right. So y'all going in there outgunned already. So, you know,
already.
Just take us through some of that.
That's why you have to go in there with a mindset different than what you see at what a cop would do. You can't, you know what I'm saying? You have to play those trickery games. Like I was telling you, it's 99% boredom. It's 1% action.
Using them Jedi mind tricks, old Yoda dude over here.
Because you got to make sure, because you are outnumbered. So when you kick in the house, you got to make sure that when you kick that house in, that door in, that everybody is on white.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. So if you go to that scene and you see this, my man got 10 of his boys in there, yeah, you're going to sit it out for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Wait till them lights go out. So we did most of our shit in the middle of the night, bro, when he came to kicking in the doors. We caught
Real talk.
Your pants down. That's the only way we can do it. The only way you could go.
Like going through Harlem? Like where? Like what was it? Like really, what borough would you go to? Like, nah, not today.
Queens.
I can believe that. I can believe that.
The neighbor might pop off on you.
Who?
The neighbor may pop off on you in Queens, bro.
Real?
Yeah, and Brooklyn, too. You understand. You talk about the late 90s, the end of the 80s, which is the end of the crack era.
Mm-hmm.
There was cops that didn't come to Fort Greene, bro. Cops didn't come to Fort Greene. Mm. If you could get your ass to the projects, you were good, bro. There wasn't nobody coming in there.
That's like, who else used to say that? MOP and tight, was it Brownsville?
Brownsville was like that. No, yeah, you couldn't go into those projects. You couldn't get the Farragut projects, Fort Greene, Marcy, East New York. You couldn't get into those projects as a cop, bro.
Yeah, no, they say.
Damn.
No.
So let me ask you, were those bounties?
Hood, nigga, you good, dog.
So could you tell, you just say, man, you could walk into the police station in New York and grab warrants and grab bounties.
If you're going through a bail's company, yeah. You can walk in.
So were those bounties more expensive? Like, look, we got to go into this hot area. This boy is more money.
Nah, I think most of the ones that was the ones that the resources were tapped out as far as financing that particular pickup,
mm-hmm.
and they just threw it to the back burner. You got to understand, New York has so much shit going on that they couldn't handle it, bro.
Well, how much a bounty pay out?
10% of the bond. So whatever the bond was, you get 10%.
Mm. So I remember you telling me about how you was chasing dude through the door, and he in something.
So in that situation, we was in Jersey, and it was a two-family house, so it was a front door and a back door, and I was in pursuit chasing the dude basically through the kitchen, through the back door. And I had my man, he was coming through the back. I didn't see the gun in my man's hand because I was running behind. He was running from me. But when my man startled him, when he came out that back door, he put one in his chest. Now, I was so close behind him that I was just able to take him down the stairs. Like, when I came, what I was coming with, I was just coming so fast behind him that before I could realize that he had put that shot out, I was already in motion on taking him down. I took him down the stairs, and that's how that shit ended. But yeah, my man caught one in the chest with that. But we wore vests. We definitely wore vests.
Good,
yeah.
Good, man.
Definitely wore vests.
Now I got a question, man, and it's a would you rather or kind of, what's better worse kind of. So what's better to do? You talking a bunch of fugitive recoveries? That's the smaller time. Was just the 10? You know, like we talking about with the numbers 10%. So let's say you talking, you know, $100,000 bonds, $10,000 bonds, $20,000. You know, the small ones. So you probably won 200 boys. Are we talking the $100,000 bond, $200,000, doing like one or two of those versus like a bunch of the smaller ones? What's best?
High percentage ones, you probably got to have a super name for yourself and some real good resources to get those.
Mm.
They're not going to give those to somebody. Like if my man's in Florida, you don't have the resources to go to Florida to get them.
Mm.
Because a lot of times you're going to spend a lot of your money in the process.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get paid in advance. So all that stakeout and all that lunch and all that gas, and all, that's all you. That's all you.
So two-parted in on that. What can be more dangerous, the high-value one or some of the low-values?
That's a good question. They were equally as dangerous because somebody don't want to go to jail. They don't want to go to jail.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like I said, you had situations where it was something simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you may get 6 months and be home.
Right.
But now you take it to a level where you definitely going in, you're going to spend some time. So that fear factor of somebody not seeing the day of light, what makes the average person do some crazy shit. Mm-hmm. Even though it's some small, petty theft stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could have got caught at Kmart stealing. You know what I'm saying? Which ain't going to put you behind bars for 15 years. But if you on the lam and you doing stuff to break laws in the process of staying on the lam, there it is, you know what I'm saying? So most of the cases for us to stay busy, we took the small cases.
Because
those are the ones we could probably get easily and get to the next case. The big ones, you had to put a lot of time and resources to.
So was there like a high-profile dude that you know that y'all had to go get?
I was about to ask that, too. Oh.
Not anybody that would be, I could just say, like famous or anything like that?
Yeah, you know.
Like that. Not necessarily famous, but just not like, in the, like famous high profile in the street. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they ain't got to be famous out here in the R&B, the hip-hop world, but just in the street world.
If they was, I didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. Like that profile, no. Like if you probably was in my hood and I had to pick, I definitely didn't do nobody in my city. I stayed away from anything in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I basically stayed away from stuff like that. That was too close to home. You know what I'm saying?
I feel that.
But when it was Jersey, yeah, I didn't know too much about those cats and what they were doing.
Well, shit, like, same question, different aspect, right? So if it wasn't somebody famous, what was, like, the highest one you had to do, and what did it take to get them? Like, the highest bond?
The highest bond we probably made, it was a $200,000 bond. So it was a 20 grand, you know, we split between four or five of us. Mm-hmm. So the money was good when you catch that person. But that particular case, again, you're talking about a lot of time and a lot of resources. You know, we spent a lot of time on the streets, a lot of time at old addresses, you know, new addresses, jobs, old past jobs. So the time that was put into it, you had to be confident you was going to catch somebody because this is all your money you was spending.
Mm-hmm. Are those typically the longer time ones than the short ones, or do you have some short ones that could be long, you know, long drawn out?
Even the short ones, if a person has the thing is, if a person has family, it's hard. Yeah. It's harder to catch somebody if they got family. Now, if somebody is, but again, on the same token, if somebody doesn't have family, it's also hard to find that person.
Right, because nobody you don't really know where they at.
Really to track down and stuff. So it was really a case-by-case type thing. And like I said, it's 99% boredom, and it was 1% action. But that 1% action was enough for you to make you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now that I'm 51, you couldn't talk me into doing that.
So when did you transition from that? When did you come up? Did you? Because so did you? You tried to do that also here, right? Because you
when I first came here, that was my thing. Was I was going to try to do the whole bouncing thing out here and the fugitive recovery, because that's what I did for like the last 5 years when I was in New York. You know, so I really try to focus on that, but it was the market was different here.
Mm.
The market was totally, and maybe because of the gun laws here, because it was so easy to have a gun. And then also when I got here, there was a series of guys that was in that business that was putting out a bad name for people, doing a lot of shady stuff, because you do have the ability. I mean, it's just like a cop. You have to... You can go left real quick. The fruit is hanging.
Say it's a lot of Alonzo's out there, huh?
There's a lot of the fruit hanging. Because I couldn't tell you how many places we went into where there was drugs and cash on the table. We were cracking some houses, and they had shit that we could have took. And a lot of those guys did take.
I can believe it.
You know what I'm saying? You ain't gonna need these 20 bands real quick, my man.
There's no tracking us.
Right.
There's no tracking us. We're not identifying ourselves as a police officer.
Right.
So what we can do, because of the Constitution, we was able to kick in the door with no warrant. We didn't need no warrant to kick in the door. You know what I'm saying? Where a cop had to kick in, he had to have a full-blown warrant to technically kick. All we had to have is a suspicion that person was in there.
Right.
If we even thought that, so I couldn't tell you how many houses we kicked in just for the fuck of it, bro. Middle of the night, leaving your shit unhinged for you to pay for that.
My bad, Rollo ain't here.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah, well, there was a lot of situations where we kicked in doors. And
you ever thought about doing PI work?
I did think about it. See, I'm gonna tell you what changed the game for me when I came to Michigan. I'm gonna tell you.
I thought about that too.
I tried to get into the security field. And I tried to get into the bouncing thing, and I realized what we were getting paid in New York as a night as a bouncer. I knew people that made a living as a bouncer in New York. That's all they did.
Mm-hmm.
They were bringing home $600, $700, $800 a night.
Mm-hmm.
When I came here, they offered me to do that work for $100 a night.
Right.
I didn't see the value in that. You know what I'm saying? So
makes sense.
That's when I started. Let me get into back into the fugitive recovery, and I teamed up with A1's bail bonds out in Dearborn. I teamed up with them, and I started writing bonds.
I wonder if that's what Jones used to do.
Yeah.
But most of the guys in Michigan now that do that type of work, it's actually the bail bondsman that's doing, because the liability now of what you do can come back on that bail bond. So the laws have changed a lot in that aspect where you didn't need no qualifications to do that. None. Mm. We had our badges that we had made, we had them just printed up, bro.
But the bail bondsman can still have a team, though, if they want to.
Oh, we had teams.
I'm talking about, here. So, like, look, we one of our brothers, he's a bail bondsman. Mm-hmm. So, like, because that's what we were going to do, like we were talking about before, we was going to do it as well.
Contract out.
Yeah, and just basically work as a team through him or with him, you know, for if he got somebody to pick up.
Yeah.
So, but they can still do that, though.
You can still do that.
Okay.
You can still do that, but you have to have that bail bondsman, you got to talk him into that. You know what I'm saying? And you got to show a lot of professionalism because, again, his name on the line.
Right.
If you do something crazy. And when I first got here, there was a string of cats that were doing it that were robbing people. They were using it, their means, you know, to rob. And that's why it got really difficult here to do it. Plus, the element of the guns did change a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Because I don't know the level of skill that you have, and you want to be a, you want to be on a team with me, and I don't know how you're running that gun.
Right.
And nor do you know how I'm running my gun. You know what I'm saying? So a team is built. You know what I'm saying? You can't make a team overnight. You got to build that. You got to train together. You basically got to live together to be around guns with me like that, in that fashion. You know 100%. What I'm saying? So, like I said, we had to be sneaky. We had to be sneaky. That's how we did it.
So did you take that knowledge and bring it into the USC, like you being a firearms instructor today? In today's, you know, because you, that information, the stuff you gathered from, you know, them years doing bouncing, the bounty hunter, like you brought that over into being a CPL instructor?
Two separate things, because I'll be honest with you, and growing up in New York by not having the means to have a legal firearm like that wasn't really on my radar until I got here. That was something that when I got here that got on my radar. I was like, all right, I can stop carrying guns illegally and start, you know what I'm saying?
Start carrying them legally,
actually carrying guns and they're doing it legally. That was foreign to me, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, these cats has got CPLs. That was totally foreign for me coming from New York, because none of my boys that carried guns had no CPLs. I didn't have no CPL. And I've always carried a gun. You know what I'm saying? My father always carried a gun.
Well, but the mindset of it, though, like, just being, because you said teams, you said the mindset of going from 99% nothing going on to that 1% action. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of like how, you know, you can be chilling, all of a sudden, I got
to
get active.
Right. And in that situation, I saw a lot of things that I said to myself, if we had guns on it, man, it probably would have been bad, bro. Even these guys that are police officers don't know what they're doing.
Oh, man.
Well, but then some of that, you said you had to be trickery. Like, not trickery, but that's called de-escalation, right?
Right.
You know how to talk your way out of a situation opposed to going and get active.
So basically, when it came to taking to a professional level when it came to the firearms, like I said, it was all back when the pandemic hit, the first, you know, Trump at that time was in. At that point, the country was busting at its seams, in my eyes. That's how it was. So now I got the legal means to carry a firearm, and I'm not really getting into the training part of that part. Just I was legally able to train. Mm-hmm. My personality gears me to be the best at what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So when I started carrying, I took that shit serious, and I started training. Once I started training, I seen how I developed from a hood dude that shot to a dude that's on a professional level. I said to myself, we need to start teaching this to our community. Mm-hmm. Our community is 20 years behind when it comes to the Second Amendment, that these other guys, the dollars that they know, we didn't know that stuff.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So my purpose was to make sure that everybody around me was educated.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And to make sure that they protected themselves. Like, I don't know if you guys realize, they just dropped this 29th state as a constitutional carry.
South Carolina.
Some people agree with
South
that.
South Carolina, yeah.
Mm. You basically are telling people they don't have to train.
And
that's insane.
It
goes against everything that they're talking about.
Everything.
You know what I'm saying?
Dog, man, as you could probably tell in the inflection of my voice, that's a pain point for me as
it
an instructor.
It has to be.
Because it's so many people, thank you, sir. It's so many people that's in the quote unquote the greater 2A community that's like, yeah, constitutional, blah, blah, blah. We can just carry. It ain't just about, yes, you can carry your gun wherever you want to. That's cool. Do what you do, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, now you got 1,000 nuts out here that don't know how to carry, don't know how to shoot, don't know what they're doing.
Right, don't have the mentality.
Yeah, don't have the mentality.
When to use it, when not to use it.
Yeah, and because it's deeper than just pulling the trigger.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you just making it worse. You know what I'm saying? And for starters, yeah, you're taking money out the pocket, but it's just the whole aspect of everything. It's everything. Like, dog, you're just making it worse.
You're making it worse,
And that's another question we're going to get into. But look, if you like what we're talking about, please like and subscribe. So quick, so fast, like Snoop say.
Oh, yeah.
So quick, so fast. And look, I make it easy for y'all. You can hit the button or even scan the barcode. Look, check that out. Scan that barcode.
Click, click, pow.
Click, click, pow. I'm going to put it up. I got a little QR code. You can scan it. Check it out. You know, this is what we're doing, Dre. You know, check that out. Dre from the Authentic Podcast is on
Authentic
the show.
Dre
in the
is
building.
In the building.
But look.
Oh, yeah.
We in here, Deuce Crew Production.
So look. I want you to go in there because, you know, I was looking at that that we were talking about this a little bit too, the extreme risk protection order. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you think about that? Like, the idea that somebody can take your firearms or something away from you and you not even knowing that they did it, right? Because that's kind of like they, you know, just, Karen pop up like, hey, such, I seen him outside doing some unsafe stuff, da-da-da, I don't like it, and just get you all caught up.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a gun grab. That's exactly what it is. It's a basic gun grab. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Every one of us here got ex-girlfriends. We all got ops, bro. It could be the minor op, but we all got ops, bro. You know what I'm saying?
That's
if you've been on this planet for a long time, you're going to have somebody that don't agree with your views. The way that this law is set up, that I can have, it's just a suspicion that I feel like you're a dangerous person with a firearm, and that's enough for me to have your guns removed.
Right.
Now, I can be bold-faced lying. It's a misdemeanor for me to bold-faced lie.
Right.
See, that's what I was trying to find out. Like, what is the, if I lie, like, what, they going to slap me on my hand and say, oh, maybe next time.
It's a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor because at that point, you have to report it to an officer of the law or an official, like, in that official capacity. So, in that, in essence, you're lying to a police officer.
Right.
Just like when you get pulled over and you say, it ain't just, oh, I wasn't speeding. It's not that lie. But it's like, well, who are you? And you start telling them, you know, other, you know, things, and you start lying about the issue, and they find out that you was lying, that's another like you just said with dude on the run. You start lying to somebody, you got away with it.
You compound it.
Yeah, that they found out that you lied to the cop about this. Well, that's another charge on your belt. And then another one here, then another one there. It's the same thing.
So, yeah, again, you take that law they just passed where it's that easy because at that point, once you make that claim, there's no investigation will be done after they receive your guns.
Yep.
So they're going to come get your guns with no investigation. Mm-hmm. And you have to basically get an investigation to show why you're worthy of having those guns.
Right. So I was looking up some stuff like, you know, the lack of opportunity for appeal. Like, you know what I'm saying? They may not even want to. It's not like they're going to do it like the next day. You know what I'm saying?
Nah.
You have to show reasons why you need your guns back. And that may be, you know, they could push that shit months and months. And they holding your firearm.
Yeah.
That's why that's all just like,
how many people you know that had a firearm confiscated that actually got it back?
Two.
I have
maybe two.
Right. Most of them don't get it back. Yeah. You can legally get it, but they'll string you out so long.
String it out, yeah.
You'll forget about it.
Well, I have not had anyone that it got it. Well, the most people that I know that got it had a situation. And they got it back with, like, a couple, I want to say maybe a month, but it came back in that white box with that red paperwork in it. But, you know what I'm saying?
In the past, if you had a protective order, that would get your guns taken. But you would have to go to the court, and they would have to approve a protection order on that person, and then they would come receive, you know, take your guns.
But
now it's just a speculation.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like for us? Like, what does these red flags look like for people like us?
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the professional gun owners that post this stuff?
Yeah.
Don't look good, son.
I guess, you know what I'm saying? To me, it's like kind of
we got
to
stop telling everybody what we got.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, somebody can say, oh, that's an excessive amount of firearms that my man got. Why? You need to come get them, boy. And that's it. But again, it's a grab because look at this. They put that out there, and on the same breath, they got this constitutional carry. It makes no sense, bro.
It's a setup.
It's a
catch 22.
It's a setup, bro.
But for who, though?
Not for us.
Come on now. What you think?
You already know, bro. You already know who it's for.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. The worst thing you can have is a black man that's armed. The second thing is a black man that's armed and trained, bro.
Right.
That's dangerous to them. That's dangerous to any culture, bro.
And then you add knowledgeable too?
Man, that's dangerous.
Well, I looked at that because I was like, you know, because I seen something that went through. I want to say it was last year. It was the first time somebody got their firearms took. It was a gentleman. His girlfriend got his firearms took. I think it was like, last year, 2023, it popped up. And it was on Metro Detroit Crime News or something. Like, that was the first
Metro
one
Detroit
in Michigan
News, yeah.
That actually posted a guy getting his firearm took from a previous situation he had years ago.
Under this new law?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, he had a situation years ago. I guess somebody called in and said, you know, he may be a risk or da-da-da-da-da, and they came and got his stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think I know what you're talking about. I think I've seen that, too.
I was just like, what?
Damn.
So... But, you know,
what makes it scary is that for you to think that, again.
But it's also the idea that you, okay, so analogy, right? So if you drive motorcycles, and you having a bad day or whatever, whatever, you tripping, you may be feeling like you do depressed, your homies can call and get your motorcycle tooken because something you may do in the future. It ain't something you did then or now. It's something like you may do later.
Right.
Like, dang.
Now, they do have organizations. I don't know offhand what they are, but there is an organization where, let's say, if I feel like my man is going through some personal stuff and he got guns, they will come and basically volunteer. You give them your guns, and they will store your guns for you until you feel you can come back and get them. And
you know what? I didn't post them on here. It's called Walker. Walker Talk America is the bridge between mental health and firearms. Yeah. They offer a service like that. And I don't know if it's actually here in Michigan yet. I need to reach out to him and see how that process even works. Because I know they do offer something. They can actually, they'll come get your guns and hold it until they feel like you are better.
Right.
But like I said, I don't know how they determine that. You know,
I think you got a better chance of getting it back from them.
Right.
And that's you know, if you are going through something, man, like somebody, an organization like that coming to get your guns is a lot better than the cops. Because, yeah. I mean, if the cops coming to get your stuff, they probably coming deep. It's all kind of shotguns and rifles everywhere. Yeah, you don't want to have to go through
that. But I guess if I have an organization that's willing to come, what am I judging to say that you're okay to give it back, though? Like, what am I?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What's
the criteria for that?
What's the criteria and what level? You know what I'm saying? Checking your temperature. Or are you still?
I think that's in that mindset where he would say, all right, listen, I got something personally going on where I'm personally saying I need to turn my gun. Most people ain't going to. If you have that courage to say to yourself, hey, man, I got something I need to get these guns away from me, I think you're responsible enough to be able to articulate why you need a back.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you would think an org like that would have social workers, you know what I'm saying? Somebody that can actually talk to
they're
you.
Doing like, okay, they're doing it. They're doing it.
Well, you know, Walker Talk America.
This is our mental health guy, too. So, yeah, and that's what I was about to say. They would have to have, like, psychiatrist or at least social workers, somebody that can determine know, okay.
Be better than the cops.
This is where he's at. He's progressed.
I'm gonna email him and see how is it in Michigan or how we get into Michigan, because you can go on Walker Talk America and fill out a survey to see where your level is at, like free, like you know you don't have to put your name on another. And if you rate at a certain level, they shoot you to some more resources, some people that you can talk to get a better understanding of what you need. So they do have resources. I was just like, man, look. That thing, that kind of scared me, but I'm glad, you know, everybody in my house is, we all love, right?
So, right.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But like you said, like showing stuff on IG, I ain't never think about that. Like, I want to be, you know, the next gun, you know, gun guy showing my firearms, whatever, whatever. Like, these young boys out here showing the Glocks with the twitches on them. That's, you know, they got the feds knocking on the
door. Right.
Like, man, why even put that type of stuff?
Dummy.
Like, we from the air. Everybody here from the air, like, look, we ain't talking about that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We ain't showing that.
I don't want you to know what I got at all.
Right, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, man. So I was just like, man, this.
Well, it also comes down to that. The major thing when it comes to how they're taking guns, it is a mental health issue with a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And this is what I try to explain to my students, just so they can get an idea of how the mind works. You take a guy that went to the military, and he seen people die. So he legitimately has a case called, PTSD?
PTSD,
that's
yeah.
a legitimate thing to have. I know kids in the hood that seen bodies, bro.
Right.
They got PTSD.
You don't think they got that? But they're not addressing what this inner city is going through, but they seen the same thing that this cat seen in Iraq. So when they lash out, it's because they black and they in the hood. Nah, bro, that's PTSD at its highest.
Right.
And they don't see it. So mental health issue,
and they didn't ask for it, and they didn't even ask for it, bro.
I'm about to say, and it's higher because it's at a younger age because it's people they know.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
They see that 8, 9, 10. At least you at the military, you got to be 18 to see that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see that in the hood.
That's real.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's important for us to know exactly what our rights are with these guns, and we need responsible black gun owners out here, bro, showing the youth. That's the only way. They've been showing their kids for a long time, bro.
Well, and that's another thing I always say, and even with so another thing. On March 15th, I'm gonna say this, Lance, and be on your brother.
Right.
If I can get my audio back sooner than later, I can put it out. They can see it. So I got a workshop. It's called Erica's Bidet Gun Workshop. It's gonna be at Uncoil. It's on March 15th. It's from 6 to 8. We showing, we teaching people how to talk to their kids about firearm safety and about safe gun storage
because I like that myself.
So they dropped that. They dropped that other, you know, a law about gun safe, the gun safety
bill.
Right,
with the safes and all that.
Yeah. I'm thinking, but like we all in here, like, we all got kids. I taught my kids that off rip. I got a safe. Yeah. My Italian homeboy from Pittsburgh. Like, look, if you buy the firearm, you had better have bought a safe right off rip.
But responsibility teaches responsibility.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
That's
word.
You're not a responsible person, but yet you got a firearm. All you're going to teach is that ignorance. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, bro, so it was a time where I did some things. And it was a time where I sat my shit on the couch, bro, on the counter. You know what I'm saying? There was times that I did all that. You know what I'm saying? But as a responsible gun owner, I know the difference between staging and storing.
Right.
I stage now. My kids is grown, so I stage now. But when they were young, I stored. But I also had them shooting at a young age because I wanted them to know if they wasn't in my house and they went to somebody else's house and that kid pulled out a firearm, they need to know the difference.
Well, going back to what you said, like, and that's another thing, too, why the book was so important because I was like, other kids, and you know, they go hunting with their dad, but they got to go to that gun safety course before they go hunting. Then when they go hunting, they see what a round can do to flesh. That's something that's gonna stick with them for life.
It's an understanding.
We don't get that until we walk outside, we go up the block, and Ray sitting there. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you know what I'm saying? So it's different. But like I said, that's, you know, I didn't even mention that, but I'm glad that you put that out there like that because we need more responsible gun owners, and then we need more responsible gun owner instructors that teaching that in class, like emphasizing that in class, not just breezing through it. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, even down to the name of my company, I made it strategic because the Urban Defense Solution, you have to be different in an urban environment. So
Wait a minute, time out. What'd your boy say? Come on. What'd he say?
Who?
Don't go to such and such place because they not from Detroit.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You got to come train and be with me because I'm from Detroit. I know what it is to move around in the city.
I mean, and there's some truth to that. Like, the way somebody's going to train that lives up north is going to be different than I'm going to train because I think in an urban environment, you have to be more trained because you got to be more precise on where them rounds go.
Yeah, but that's that. But see, what he talking about, that's the overplay for the under, though. Yeah, that's the flashing lights for the, you know what I mean? While you, it is true in the statement, but it's a ploy tactic to get you in. You know how the car commercials, man, get this loaded out. F-150 Lariat Super blah, blah, blah for $299 with just $5,000 down. And you go in there like, yeah, we ain't got none of those. But we can get you one of these over here, though, see, since you're already in the dealership.
And I say this, and I got a coalition, a commission, right? Black, the OGs, right? And I'm crucial, critical on us because we got to teach so much and know so much to teach, right? And I'm just like, if you ain't where I'm at, or want to be where I be trying to get, then I ain't, you know what I'm saying? I ain't trying to hear what you're trying to say. Because I know, like, you trying to get better. You trying to get better. Mm-hmm. So I know you're going to get that to your students. Mm-hmm. If you ain't where I'm at, you can keep it moving. I ain't trying to hear what you're trying to say.
I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you call me, hey, man, da-da-da, we going to go. You, next time competition, I'm going. Same thing he did. Right. Da-da-da, I'm going. So I know that y'all trying to see a different perspective of what y'all already know. So you trying to get better. And that is going to trickle down because y'all gun enthusiasts, y'all gun owners, families training, you gonna put that to your students. Mm-hmm. So I know that's gonna come back. Other people, like, look, you what? Where you be? Okay, come out here with me. Let's get down. Oh, you know.
It's definitely a passion. I'm not gonna say that the addiction bug hasn't kicked in. It definitely has kicked in.
You know what? One thing, you know, we about to close up. Talk about what happened and what you about to do in May. Or do you want to talk about that?
May.
You going to the tactical games,
oh.
And it's because of what?
Okay, so.
And I ain't in the shape for that, I want to go watch.
Listen,
it looks sweet, but
I told, bro, I'm going to get you a shirt. I'm going to get you 2-3 shirts.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I'm sponsored, but I ain't about to do this.
So, I've always been a solid dude, size-wise. Never had, you know, no problems with nobody as far as that. You know what I'm saying? So, about 5-6 years ago, went to the gym. No pain, nothing. And I woke up that next day paralyzed from the waist down.
Damn.
Shit, couldn't piss, couldn't do nothing, bro. And I had to actually stay in DMC for a whole 11 months.
Damn.
So I could come home to do 6 months of home therapy.
Damn.
So in that process, if you want to talk about a man's ego dropping, his pride just hit the floor. I mean, I felt less than a man. I'm gonna keep it a buck.
Right.
So right when that pandemic hit is when they cut off all my physical therapy. So I had to basically get my mind right to say I gotta do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically got myself in the best shape of my life in that process. So now I'm looking at these tactical games, and I'm saying, you know what? I'm 51 years old, and I think that's my last chance to really put that competition level in to that to that extent. And that's what I signed up for. I don't know how I'm gonna do, but I'm definitely gonna it's something I've told myself I want to get myself in the best shape. And it also said what the type of business that I'm trying to do. You know what I'm saying? I got to be able to show certain things, and I got to be ready to do it. So I tell people, I lost my stomach because I wanted to carry appendix.
It's
that simple, bro.
There you go.
You got to have little things to motivate you, and I lost that stomach because I wanted to carry appendix. You know what I'm saying? And
I'm going to be as motivated as you one day, dog.
He carried 3 o'clock, so you know he's not motivated.
He had
4 o'clock. He put it on his back. He said, shit.
Because that's why I wanted to lose to carry appendix. And I got an appendix rig, and actually before I gained a little bit, I actually was carrying appendix. Yeah, but it's, you know, the driving factor. But, yeah.
When you get humbled, I don't know if anybody at this table has been humbled at that level, but that was a humbling experience for me.
Exactly, man.
And with that humbling experience, I learned a lot of things about myself, bro. And I learned that sometimes you got to be smart and not always physical. Cause I've always been physical. My whole life, I've been a physical dude. Any problem I had, we got physical. We got active, bro. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I realized. And I'll tell you a funny story. There's a guy at my job, and he's probably 65, old white guy. And I was coming out the bed. Now, there was a point where I looked physically fine, but I had no fucking balance, bro. Like, my balance was totally off. That was the last thing that kicked. It was my balance. So we coming around the bathroom and just happened to meet at the same point, and it was just a little tap. That tap sent me flying across the room, bro.
Damn.
That affected my ego so bad, bro. That started the 7-day regimen, bro. That started the 7-day regimen. That one little incident.
I walk up in the gym. He in there. He like, I go to LA Fitness sometimes. Sometimes I go to Planet Fitness. And, you know, we talking. He's 51. I say, you know what? I'm slacking.
Right.
Well,
yes. Hey, he in there getting it in. He like, he got the hood over his head. I'm like,
the funny thing about it, the only time I've ever had a conversation in the gym was with you.
Oh, really?
I'm an unsociable dude in the gym, bro.
Yeah. Listen.
I got my hood up, my headphones on, and I'm not making no eye contact,
bro. Let me tell you how gangster I was. Me and him in there talking. This was last week. He talking, you know. I get on there, I start doing a little. I did like 2 exercises, right? He said, I said, you about to go? He said, yeah. I said, all right, let's go. Oh, my God, Winnie.
So you had just got there. So what happened was.
Listen, man, I don't be kidding because I get off so late. And then I get home like 8:30. And then, you know, wife with the kids, you know, it just be a lot, man.
I ringed in on him. I said, yo, if you go to the gym, I said, come holler at me. And he said, all right, about 7. So in my mind, I'm like, let me get there at 6 because I really don't like nobody messing up my shit. You know what I'm saying?
You get like your routine in before you get there.
So I said, let me get in at 6.
I walked right out with him like I ain't did shit.
I seen him. I seen right when he sat down, I was pretty much done. So I walked up. We had about a 10-minute conversation. And then he was wrapping up, bro. He was wrapping up, son.
Hey, that sound like fats in the gym, dog.
Right.
Look, I did my shoulders, my thinner. Like, hey, you about to go? He's like, yeah. Like, all right, let's keep talking. Boom, boom. We walked on out, walked to the car, kept it going.
But I've always lived my life, you know, like in a sense where, you know, if somebody's doing something to you and you don't like it, and you tell them not to do it, and you don't have the ability to stop that person from doing it, that's a suggestion, bro.
Right.
That's a pure suggestion, bro. So I think every man should have the ability to be ready, bro.
Yeah.
Hey.
Especially in this day and age.
That's
you
game.
You got to be ready, bro. You got to be ready. You know what I'm saying?
That's game. Hey, so we at what, 107?
Yeah.
Hour and 7?
107, 108.
Hey, Lance, I like that. You know, Barry been like, hey. You know what I'm saying? He'd have hit me like time to go.
Because sometimes I don't want to be like, hey, KJ, look, we got 10 minutes, dog. Wrap this. You know, I ain't trying to, you know.
You don't say that. You just be like, you give me the phone. And yeah, like, check this out.
Quick
like,
little dog, thing. If you see in radio, that's how they do. They put a little sticky and put 10 on the
But somehow the clock didn't come over here with us. I don't know where the clock
at. I don't know where the clock at either, dog. I don't know where the clock at. It might be one of these bags or something, man.
But, you know.
We all got iPhones. You shouldn't need.
I know, I got it right there. I'm watching it.
Now, we got a clock somewhere that literally count down.
They try to be professional on the first guy here. All the shit,
You win now, dog.
You family now.
But all right, CJ, tell us where they can find you at, follow you at, all that good stuff, man.
So my company is Urban Defense Solutions. You can check me out at udsdetroit.com. It's my website. And then if you want to email me, udsdetroit@gmail.com. And then my Instagram page is udsdetroit.
All right, so listen, man, he's certified, bro. You've been up here getting game, spitting game. So, look, definitely go follow him. Definitely go check him out. Bear, you got anything coming up, Bear? Mind you, if you say it, you got to give me the audio quick, sooner than later.
I mean,
you got any classes coming up, Bear?
Man, the last time was your fault that we didn't get it out right away, man. And the time before that
it probably was
between both of us. But, you know, I had nothing major coming up. I got some things going on that I got to kind of reassess. We're going to get together about some things, too. The only thing I got coming up is practicing and trying to get it in for
You got some Axe match. April.
Yeah, man.
Next month. The second week of the second Saturday of the month.
I do have a CPO class the 24th of March in Livonia.
24th of March in Livonia?
Nice.
Yeah. All right, bet. So, Bear, give me the audio sooner than later. get it out there. Yo, but that's it from us. Look, game recognize game. We recognize you, so please recognize us. And we out.
Peace.